Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Heads were a huge part of the New York punk scene during the late 1970s. The band stood out with its distinctive frenetic brand of art pop and evolved into expansive funk and propulsive polyrhythmic world beat. Chris France was there from the beginning. He was the drummer, and his wife Tina Weymouth was the bass player. Together, they went on to form Tom Tom Club. Chris chronicles what it was like to be part of this iconic, influential, and creatively restless band in a memoir called Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina. We caught up with Chris to talk about his life in music and the beginning of his collaboration with Talking Heads frontman and guitarist David Byrne.
David and I had a band together at the Rhode Island School of Design. The band was called the Artistics. The sole purpose was to entertain our friends. We played at a couple of dances and a bunch of parties. And we were doing mostly covers of garage band songs. We felt like, maybe we could write a song, you know, an original song. And we decided we would try to do that. Next thing I knew, there was a knock on the door of our painting studio that Tina and I shared. It was David. And he said, I've got the beginnings of this song I've written, which is loosely based or inspired by an Alice Cooper song. David proceeded to play. He had the first verse and the chorus, and he played this.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax.
I thought, wow, that's really good. And then he sang the chorus.
Psycho killer.
I thought, wow, this is really great. I like this. It's like a mashup between the Velvet Underground and Otis Redding. So he said, but I'd like you to help me finish the song. And I had this idea that the bridge, the middle eighth section of the song, should be in a foreign language. So I said, well, you know, Tina's mother is French and always spoke French in the home. And Tina's fluent in French. How about if she writes it in French? And he said, great, because he already had Qu'est-ce que c'est in the song anyway. So Tina sat down and she wrote the French lyrics, which translate into, in English, they mean what she said that night, what I did that night, realizing, i.e. making real, my hopes, I launch myself toward glory. So that's a very, like, formal kind of psychotic statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think she kind of nailed it. And then I wrote a second and third verse. We are vain and we are blind. And I hate people when they're not polite. And David liked that, and he wrote it down in his little notebook. So in the course of a period of about 3 hours, I think it was, we had written our first song, and I thought, this is very promising. We should do more of this.
Yeah. Fast forward a few years later, and Talking Heads are opening for the Ramones at CBGB's. And then in 1975, Seymour Stein, the founder of Sire Records, sees you, and he's blown away, and he ends up signing you to a record deal. Then you're able to recruit Milwaukee's own Jerry Harrison, former member of Jonathan Richman's Modern Lovers, to join the band. How did Jerry help flesh out Talking Heads' sound?
Well, Jerry was the kind of the perfect fit for us. We were looking, we had been considering having a fourth member. We had just been a trio. When you're a trio, if anyone stops playing, the sound gets very empty. We needed somebody to flesh out our sound, as they say. What he did was he just amplified somehow and made more beautiful the songs as they were. He didn't change a lot of things. He just added to the existing songs in such a sympathetic way. And it really made the songs sound much more full, and the textures were more interesting, and the songs became something that you could listen to over and over again. So he was the perfect match for us, Jerry.
Yeah. And while you were touring Europe with the Ramones, you and Tina visited the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. And you say in your book that it had been several years since either of you had made a painting, but both of you still thought like painters. I want to know, how did thinking like painters affect the way you approached making music?
I've noticed that my favorite bands come out of art schools, not music schools. To my way of thinking, the art school people are less concerned with technicalities and more concerned with concepts. And the music school people are more concerned about, how would Buddy Rich do it? Or how would Aretha Franklin sing it? But we in art school know we could never sound as good as Aretha Franklin. So don't even try. Just be yourself. What was instilled in us in art school was that it's okay to be inspired by the artists that came before you, but what you got to do is always add something that's unique unto yourself into the mix. Otherwise, it's not even real art. It's just copycat stuff.
Brian Eno produced, I think, three of Talking Heads albums, including your second album, More Songs About Buildings and Food. You have this great cover version of the Al Green, Teeny Hodges song, Take Me to the River, on this second album. Whose idea was it to play it at such a slow tempo?
Well, that was Brian's idea. We had been playing that song for years already, live, but we played it at the tempo that Al Green originally recorded it at, or maybe even a little faster. And it was kind of an up-tempo song. And the punk audiences loved up-tempo songs. They weren't really into ballads. But Brian said, how about if we slow this down almost to the point where you can't play it anymore? Like, play it as slow as you can play it. So we did. And then when we listened back, when we finally got one we liked and we listened back, we were like, yeah, this sounds really hip and it's definitely more sexy. That was our first hit. It was actually a top 40 AM radio hit.
Brian Eno also co-produced your third album, Fear of Music, and one of the standout tracks on this album, of course, is Life During Wartime. What's the origin story for this song?
Well, you know, David wrote the lyrics. The rhythm section of the song came first. And that was something that Tina and I had jammed on. And been jamming on when David and Jerry later joined in. And it just developed very organically that way. We had tried recording it one day in New Orleans at Alan Toussaint's studio, and it didn't work out at all because it was a day off and our heads were very distracted and we weren't focused. But Tina and I remembered that bass and drum part, and so when we got back to New York and we were working on the songs for Fear of Music, we remembered that and we brought it back up. This time it worked really well.
In 1980, Talking Heads released Remain in Light, and you guys really reinvented your sound on this one. You all improvised together, jammed together to create the songs for this album. What kind of challenges did this new approach present to you and Tina as the rhythm section of Talking Heads?
Well, because we were creating the songs, like composing the songs in the studio, our challenge was to create rhythm parts, you know, drum and bass. We didn't know where the choruses or verses or bridge sections were or anything like that. So we had to basically be like human loops. We would work out a part. We would practice and improvise until it reached our standards of excellence. And then we would record like 8 minutes of that. And then David and Jerry would come out and build on that. with the guitars and keyboards. And that was the way it went. So the challenge was to have something that was rhythmically compelling and propelled the songs forward, but you couldn't do the same thing for every song. So each one had to be different, and also different from what people expected a rock and roll drum and bass to sound like.
There's this interesting phrase you have in the beginning of your book. I think it's think that you guys were creating, and that you did create, thinking person's dance music, a thinking man's dance music, right?
Yeah, that was our goal, you know, is to move the brain and the hips.
There you go. Yeah, and I think it was mission accomplished. So let's fast forward a couple more years. David Byrne decides he wants to make a solo album. And then if Jerry Harrison says, well, if David's making one, I want to make one too. So you and Tina come up with your own side project, Tom Tom Club, and you have this big hit, Genius of Love. Can you walk us through the creative process behind the creation of this song?
We had already recorded one song called Wordy Rapping Hood, which was doing really well. It was never released in the United States, but it was doing very well in England, Europe, and Latin America. We needed to follow up with something. And our idea with Tom Tom Club was we loved club music, like music you would hear in a nightclub. And we loved the Mud Club and Danceteria in New York and the Paradise Garage. And we thought, we want to make a record that would get played in those places. We also had a strong feeling about this new thing called, they weren't even calling it hip-hop yet, they were calling it rap. And we liked that. And so with Genius of Love, our jumping off point, our source of inspiration was a song called More Bounce to the Ounce by the band Zapp, which had been produced by Bootsy Collins from James Brown and Parliament Funkadelic. And we loved it. It had a slow tempo, so it was more funky. We didn't know it at the time, but it was really good for rappers. We hadn't thought of that, but they figured it out. We started with bass and drums, as we had with Remain in Light. And then we added the little keyboard part, the little dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. And our keyboard skills were very rudimentary, but it worked. And then we brought in Adrian Ballou. And Adrian, you know, we flew his whole family down to hang out for 2 weeks. And he overdubbed on all these basic tracks we had created. And the one for Genius of Love, he put a really nice, he did a picking part with a really fast delay, short delay. So he played deet, 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 deet. But what it came out was. It was real cool, and we kept it. It was perfect. Well, the vocals, of course, were Tina and her two sisters, Laura and Lonnie. Singing in unison, harmonies in unison, multi-tracking the vocals. So we released that album that, actually Chris Blackwell released. He sold 150,000 12-inch singles imported from the UK into the United States. And then finally Seymour Stein of Sire Records woke up and said, whoa, I better make Chris and Tina an offer. We had a big hit all across the USA.
How did Talking Heads come to an end?
Well, I always say that the band never broke up, that David sneaked out of the band, and he sort of did. He had made it clear to us that a solo career was very important to him. Somebody at Warner Brothers said to him, you know, nobody at Warner's will ever take your solo career seriously as long as Talking Heads still exists. After hearing this, David was being interviewed about one of his solo projects by the Los Angeles Times, and they asked him about, well, when's Talking Heads going to do something? He said, Talking Heads is broken up. We found out about that because the LA Times called us to fact check.
Wow.
They said, is it true that you've broken up? And we're like, no. We didn't even have an argument.
What is your proudest accomplishment as an artist?
My proudest accomplishment, or the accomplishment I'm most proud of, is the fact that when I walk into the Stop and Shop supermarket and I hear Genius of Love coming over the PA system, it still sounds hip. It sounds good. And I'm so glad. It like makes people want to buy stuff. It's not just Genius of Love. It's also songs like The Road to Nowhere and even Psycho Killer, I hear it while shopping. Our legacy is a good one. We have a lot of good records, and the fact that they still sound relevant and interesting is just a big bonus.
Chris France, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Chris France is the drummer of Talking Heads and the author of the memoir, Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina. Find out more about Chris at WPR.org/beta.
And if you look at Serapio, he has crows that he uses to see, and that's sort of like seeing eye dogs.
Fantasy author Rebecca Roanhorse talks about her novel, Black Sun. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're on a road to nowhere.